It's a big show for the playoffs. We're wrapping up Wild Card Weekend, but we're also deep diving the upcoming divisional round matchups and previewing the offseason ahead for the teams that were eliminated. Plus, we'll talk the John Gruden, Derek Carr marriage, and Marvin Lewis will not go away. All that and more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I'm Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are through the wild card round of the playoffs, and we're gonna have sort of a bit of a hybrid show here. We're kind of a Christian McCaffrey like in this sense. We are going to touch on the wild card games, but we're also going to give you a deep dive preview of the divisional round games. So you'll get both of that. You'll get a bit of a post-mortem on the teams that were eliminated this past weekend. And we'll also have a little bit of a talk about coaching news and weekly awards because Andy demanded it.
Yeah, I think we ought to say we're an Alvin Kamara show on this one. Don't we want to kind of prop ourselves up a little more than that? Kamara is the better hybrid player, and he's the one still going, as we're about to talk about.
Let's see how well it does. But McCaffrey did outplay Kamara in this game, so... You know, based on what's happened in the 2018 calendar year, maybe we have to rethink that, Andy. We don't have to rethink.
Very good. Very good.
Number one.
All right, well, let's go into it. Let's go topic number one, and that is the Saints-Panthers matchup. This was a Saints finishing off the three-game sweep. They were in control of this game. They, you know, the Panthers were settling for field goals. Panthers weren't overwhelmed, and I thought Cam was pretty sharp today. But the one thing I guess I'm curious to know from you, Andy, is Sean Payton facing a 4th-and-2. Panthers are out of timeouts, a little more than 2 minutes to go. They go out, try to draw him off sides, doesn't work. They call the timeout. And then they go out again. They're at midfield. They go out again, and then they run the play. What did you think of that, Andy?
I was shocked by that, utterly shocked. I mean, I gasped audibly when they snapped the ball. And when I saw the formation, I was shocked because they came out in shotgun. You don't try to draw them off sides in shotgun, not very often. Maybe someone will try to do that next year now after thinking about this. I didn't understand it, in part because the 3rd-and-2 play right before that, they lined up in, I think it was 13 personnel, 3 tight ends on the field, and just kind of handed it off. And it felt like, all right, they're going to play clock. They're playing field position. That's what they're doing. If you know you're going for it on 4th-and-2, and maybe he didn't because you don't know that you're going to be in 4th-and-2 when you're calling that third down play. But let's say you know you're in 4-down territory. I can't believe they would run the play they did on 3rd-down then. So I was really surprised by the whole thing. And then the lack of faith in their defense, you wonder if that comes up during the week and maybe the defenders wear a badge of honor and say, hey, coach, we got the stop anyway, shows you what you know. I was just surprised by the entire thing. And I understand Breeze had played brilliantly. It's the best I've seen Breeze play, in fact, or he's right up there for this whole season. So I get that, but I would make Cam Newton go 90 yards, not 50 yards. I wouldn't have risked it.
That was wild. And he would have only had to go 50 yards if that ball was batted down instead of intercepted. It was wild. And honestly, as soon as the ball was snapped, I got a pang of like excitement. I don't know if you can get a pang of excitement, but I did. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, oh, they must have had something up their sleeve. This is going to be something, some mind-blowing play call, play design here. Just kind of, it looked like they ran a slant at the top of the screen that didn't really come open, and then, you know, Breeze just sort of rolled out and hoped someone uncovered, which didn't happen.
What they did have for much of the game, and the reason they won this game, they had a great feel, and we talked about this going in. Carolina and some of their zone coverages out of blitz looks, and playing zone with 6 defenders back there, and teams late in the season started having some success against the Panthers when they did that. The Bucs had some. The Falcons in Week 17 stormed them early in that game, beating them for it. And then I think the Saints had a really good feel. Who was the guy that had the big 46-yard catch? Was that Ted Ginn late in the game that set up the Kamara touchdown near the end?
Oh, that was Michael Thomas on that deep crosser.
Michael Thomas. Yeah, you know, that was a great illustration there. That's that over route we talk about against cover 3, and we say, well, that backside linebacker is responsible for that. Well, when you're blitzing out of cover 3, there really isn't a backside linebacker. There's the flat, and there's the middle linebacker. Keekly was the middle linebacker Thomas Davis was the flat, and it's unclear who runs with the over route. And I don't know if they have rules for that. I'm sure they do, but you don't see it very often. That was just a good microcosm of the game. The Saints exploiting Carolina's lightened zoned coverages, and Breeze was unbelievably accurate throughout the game. It was an incredible throwing performance.
Yeah. We're going to talk Vikings Saints preview in a second, but before we do, let's talk Panthers really quick. Look, 11-5 regular season. That's I thought once they were, I don't know, 2-2 and going to Foxborough, I thought this season might fall apart for them. Were they 2-2 or 3-1 when they went to Foxborough? Might have been 3-1 at that point. I'll look that up as I ramble. But it was, they're transitioning a little more quick strike stuff maybe for Cam, keep him upright, less hits, less design runs, and they just sort of abandoned that as the season went on, and they became more and more effective. Obviously, the defense is good, but offensively, what do you do with this team? And, does it make a difference if they, they traded Kelvin Benjamin, but they did get Greg Olsen back late. If you add sort of another one of those big body deep threats like a Kelvin Benjamin to complement Devin Funchess. Does that sort of get them back to maybe what they were? Cam might never have a season like he had in 2015, but back in that direction. And by the way, they were 2-1 when they went to New England, and then they were 3-1 when they won there.
I think, first of all, the whole spread out quick strike, we're going to build around McCaffrey and we're going to look like the Patriots of last season. That's not going to happen. We've talked about that. That does not fit Newton's skill set, and that's why they gradually got away from it as the season progressed. You don't call plays that your quarterback's not good at running. You call the ones he is good at running, and Newton is good in the deep drop back game. Now, what Newton also is in the deep drop back game is inconsistent as a passer, and that's not changing. He's in his late 20s now. He is what he is. He's a tremendous running quarterback. He's a strong-arm thrower. He made some unbelievably good strong-arm throws in this game today. Dig routes to Funchess, some deep out routes that won to Clay late in the game. But he is going to be a week-to-week passer. When he misses, it's going to be wild and high. They went out and got Benjamin and Funchess to account for that, some big targets to kind of minimize the damage of that. I think you go back to that, and maybe that's saying a mea culpa on the Benjamin trade. Hey, we made a mistake there. Or maybe they felt Benjamin's not worth a second contract and they can go draft someone else. Whatever it is, that's how they have to play. Big targets downfield. McCaffrey's the option route runner underneath of it all. Mm-hmm. That's how they're going to play no matter what they build the roster as, because that's the only way Newton is set up to succeed.
Number two.
We are previewing Vikings Saints in the divisional round. This is, you might have forgotten, this is a rematch. This was the early Monday night game in week one, and we kind of said, oh, same old Saints, can't play defense. Bunch of busts in the secondary. Sam Bradford, he's active again, by the way. Maybe that'll be a three-way QB controversy out of nowhere. But, Sam Bradford carved up the Saints. It was a fairly comfortable win for the Vikings. Where are we now at this point? I mean, now it's Case Keenum, who just had the year of his life, and now it's a Saints defense that is much different than the one that, or at least much different than the one that we thought we were watching in week one.
Yeah, it is. It's actually probably not as talented of a defense. They've had some injuries. They're not as deep. They've lost some guys in the front seven, but that's the case with a lot of teams. And mm-hmm. Some of their younger, they're young in the secondary, Lattimore, Marcus Williams at free safety. Assume those guys are more comfortable with what's going on. What the Vikings did in that game and what they continued to do for the rest of the season, and the reason Pat Shurmur's probably going to get a head coaching job this year, they beat the Saints early in the down with switch releases if it was man coverage. So guys crisscrossing off the snap, stacks, motion to stacks, receivers bunching together. And then they beat them later in the down with route combinations that exploited zones, so sending two receivers through one defender's zone, multiple receivers going high and low, whatever it was. They were extremely well designed. They out-executed and out-coached the Saints in that game, and they continued to do that all season long. Now, what's different? There's no Dalvin Cook this time. He was a big factor in that one, too, if I recall. Yep. And then Case Keenum. Yeah, and what Case Keenum gives you that you don't get from Bradford, because Bradford's probably the better, more gifted pocket passer, even though I think Keenum's been excellent in the pocket this year, certainly by the standard we thought for him. Keenum gives you the second reaction plays. When the design doesn't work, he has found a way to make something work anyway this season, and that's what's been so flabbergasting about him, because that's truly great quarterbacking when you can do that. And there's a fine line between relying on that and using that. And I think, you know, I think there are guys in the league that rely on that, and you see inconsistency from them each week. Keenum's a guy that does not rely on it. He still runs the offense, but he uses it when necessary. And with the way the Saints are playing right now, and Cameron Jordan, who had an unbelievable showing against Carolina. And remember, it's a banged-up Vikings offensive line, too. They've been playing backups a lot the last few weeks, guys shuffling around. Keenum's going to have to make some second reaction plays in this game.
Now, looking at the other side of the ball, the Saints lost Andres Pete in this win over the Panthers. And, you know, we don't know the extent of the injury at this point, but he was carted off. He was put in the air cast. And we will assume at this point that they will not have Pete. They were unable to run the ball. They couldn't get anything going with Ingram and Kamara in the run game against the Panthers. Certainly the Vikings can stop the run. And on top of that, do the Vikings, because of the athleticism they have in the linebacking corps, do they match up better with Kamara than a lot of teams would?
Yeah, I think they do. And also, their safeties are interchangeable and aggressive and fast. And Drew Brees, the way he beats you is by manipulating your safeties first and foremost. And I don't know if you're going to manipulate Harrison Smith and Andrew Sundahill. I think Xavier Rhodes is the most valuable player on that defense because of the position he plays and how they use him. But I think Sandejo and Smith are what makes the defense go, and that's the matchup. And the Saints love to throw in the middle of the field, and Kamara is a part of that. And he, you know, how the emotion him out, how the defense responds, all that comes into play. But to answer your question, Gary, yeah, they are better equipped to match up. The Panthers have great speed at linebacker. The Vikings have speed at linebacker and safety, and they also have versatility there.
Yeah. Andy, we're going to add a new game show to this show here today. Guess the line. What do you think the Vegas line is, opening line for Vikings?
Okay.
Saints?
I think it's Vikings plus 4.5.
Minus.
Well, oh, minus. Yeah. Vikings.
Yes.
They believe the Vikings can win by 4 is what I'm trying to say.
Pretty good. 3.5.
Okay.
I think that was
the
easiest one.
You get 3 for being at home.
Yeah. Yeah, you pretty much get 3 for being at home, is the rule of thumb. I think that was the easiest one to get, so they'll get increasingly harder as we go on here. But I don't know, anything else you want to...
Vikings are a better defense. Yeah, no, Vikings are a better defense in care. This will not be the same Saints offense next week. They're not going to be able to play this way. And when they were tremendous, but they have what they didn't get is the mix with their run game, and you're not going to run great on Minnesota, but you got to get a little bit of something. And the backfield screen game, I don't think that ever quite fully developed. Those are two parts of the Saints that have been huge, and you have to have your full offense and arsenal against the Vikings.
Yeah. You know, I was actually thinking, getting way ahead of ourselves. We were kind of wondering, you know, put Drew Brees out in the elements. That was the old thing. You know, get him out in the elements, especially in December, January. It's a little bit of a different offense. Obviously, you know, they're a different team this year, but I wonder if anyone in the NFC will have to go outside after this week. And we'll talk about Falcons-Eagles in a little bit. But
that'll decide it.
Yeah, that might be indoor football in the NFC Championship game.
Number 3.
We are going Falcons-Ram, the Saturday night game. I think I can, you know, you can sum this up kind of quickly. I mean, look, the Rams shot themselves in the foot. Their special teams have been great all year. And they have the two giveaways on special teams in their own territory, and that's tough to overcome in a playoff game. And, you know, the offense was not as sharp. I thought the Falcons' defense was kind of the story of the game as far as the quality of performance, and Atlanta still working through some things on offense, especially in the red zone, but good, better than they maybe were back in September.
It did look like one team had been there before and the other was there for the first time. We don't know how that impacts ever, and does Farrell Cooper fumble because he's never been there before in the play. I mean, we don't know that. But overall, if we're just slapsticking this thing, you know, it did look like one team had been there and one team had not. I was a little surprised the Saints or the Rams didn't get into their backfield screen game a little more. They didn't really challenge those Falcon linebackers in coverage with Todd Gurley, and I don't know why that is. But I thought that was a big part that was missing from the offense. And Atlanta's not an easy defense to play against because of all that speed. And you wonder, maybe they felt speed counters the screen game, but I think you could argue it's the other way around, too. You can't remove – you can't make a guy slower by physically, so you have to make him slower by what you show him in deception and misdirection and delay action. The screen builds into all of those concepts, make the guy's speed work against him. I was surprised that we didn't see that as much from the Rams in this game.
Yeah, I mean, look, the the fumbles not only obviously give your opponent an extra possession, but I mean, look, the Rams ran, 10 plays in the first quarter, and doing math real quick, 13, 21. So, 31 plays in the first half, which I guess is not that bad, but, sort of changes the game
rhythmic,
flow and maybe get away from some things.
Right, and I think then they had like a 15-play drive at the end of the half or something like that, too, at some point. They had a long drive somewhere in there. I could be mistaken. It was maybe in the second half.
Yeah, it was that long one that they ended up turning over on downs in the fourth quarter.
Okay, all right, so that's beside the point. But there was never – you're right. The play calling – or not the play calling, but the play number 31's misleading because there wasn't that rhythmic feel to the Rams. There wasn't the great harmony with their run and their pass game either. Everything felt just a tick off all game long. And maybe that's what speed on the defense does to you.
Yeah, well, look, let's take a quick look ahead at the Rams offseason. Obviously, I mean, you got to be excited about this team. They have talented young players in place in a lot of spots. I want to talk real briefly about their three big free agents here: Aaron Donald, Sammy Watkins, Trumaine Johnson. I mean, Donald, they have to figure out a way to lock him up long term, and then it's a matter of who do you franchise tag. I don't know if they can tag Trumaine Johnson.
I might be making that up, but
they did tag him two years ago. Does that sound right? No, last year.
Yeah, they did because
two years ago when they let Janoris walk.
Yes, correct. Yeah. You have to – obviously, Donald's a no-brainer, and you pay whatever the market demands on that. And Trumaine Johnson, I think, is a guy you have to re-sign as well. There aren't many corners in the NFL who can travel with big-bodied number one wide receivers, Julio Jones type, to take the example from this game. And Johnson, while he's not a shutdown guy in that mark, like the way Xavier Rhodes might be or the way Lattimore, who has shown he can also travel with big-body guys, he's not quite that. He's still a quality number one corner who travels. I mean, those guys are hard to find. If you were trying to draft someone to do what he does, you'd have to go in the top 15 for sure and probably in the top 10 to get that kind of guy. So I think you get Johnson back if you can. Watkins, that's a function of the price tag. They really don't use the outside receiver as much in that system as other systems do. So I don't think they need to break the bank for Sammy Watkins. What they need is a reliable route runner out there. If they can get him back at the right number, I guess you go for that, but I'm sure they'll look closely at the draft class this year at wide receiver.
Okay, and to correct myself, this is why it was in my head that they can't tag Johnson again. They tagged him this year as well, so they tagged him the last 2 years, so they won't tag him a third year in a row. Presumably, the franchise tag becomes an option for Watkins, and they'll have to see if they can maybe work out something else with Trumaine Johnson going forward here. But hey, we'll have a whole offseason to talk about what they should do, and then we will actually see what they actually do sometime in March.
Number four.
For now, let's go on to topic number four, and that is previewing Eagles-Falcons in the divisional round. You know, I mentioned a moment ago, Falcons defense has been much better. Eagles offense is obviously very much a question mark at this point with what you saw from Nick Foles over his, let's say, two full games and then, two bits of games. Is this all of a sudden a situation where the Falcons are walking into Philadelphia with a major edge when it comes to that side of the ball?
Well, let's look at it this way, and we can decide who has the edge or what that means. We know Philadelphia has to be a run-first offense. And that's especially true in this game. And I think their offense stylistically is set up to go after a Falcons defense that's built on speed but is undersized at linebacker. Deion Jones is about 220. Duke Riley, their rookie backer, who I think is fast as Jones at times. He was early in the season. He hasn't been lately. But they'll put him on the field if you put three tight ends on the field. And Philadelphia does that with some regularity. He's not very big either. And the Eagles run a lot of trap plays where offensive linemen bypass the defensive linemen and go right up to the linebacker. I think that's a great concept against the Falcons defense that A, features penetration with the defensive line, and then B, as we just said, it's not very big at linebacker. Get big body blockers on them right away and get Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount rolling downhill against them. And that's the formula. And you're going to have to do that to stay out of third and long, because when you get into third down and long, the lack of quick twitch that you get from Foles and some of his slower, methodical decision-making becomes an issue. And the other thing is Atlanta's corners right now are playing lights out. I mean, they've been making plays on the ball for several weeks. Robert Alford and Desmond Trufant outside. And I don't think Philadelphia's receivers match up particularly well against either of those guys.
What's the over-under for rushing attempts for the Eagles? We're looking at like 35?
I know Peter King, I talked to him this afternoon, and he said he's saying 40. That's his thesis, and I don't disagree with that. Probably 35. It comes into game flow a little bit, and some of that gets down to who has the ball in 2 minutes and who doesn't. But it has to be, however it shakes out, it has to be a run-first approach by the Eagles.
And where are we as far as this Falcons offense going against? Another defense within elite, pass rush, big time front four. I don't know. Is Atlanta any closer to sort of finding some consistency?
Did you feel they were consistent against the Rams defense? I didn't think it was a great offensive show. I thought the Rams played pretty well on defense.
Rams defense was winning, was clearly winning the first half of this game, and I think the Rams defense maybe got tired in the second half since they were out there for a while. I did not think it was an impressive performance by the Falcons offense, considering what they should be. Though we've been saying that all year, and I've been sort of defending them, saying, they've been inches away from some huge plays that would completely change the narrative on what they've been doing offensively. But I thought this was one of their less impressive performances.
We know the Eagles, those corners have given up some huge plays on double moves late in the season. Darby and Jalen Mills both had issues with that. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The tricky part with double moves is you have to block up the timing for that. It takes a little longer, and you just said that Eagles defensive line is the best in the NFL, and the backup defensive line unit is probably one of the top 15 in the NFL. So how do you get the ball out safely? Do you move the pocket for Matt Ryan? The other part is a lot of this will come down to Philadelphia and how they deploy their safeties, because they play with three of them. They play with Malcolm Jenkins, Rodney McLeod, and then Corey Graham, the former Bill, who all three of those guys, two of those guys rather, Graham and Jenkins, are former cornerbacks, and they have unique matchup skills, and they play all over the formation, and they're going to be the guys that double-team Julio Jones in some fashion. The other thing is those guys, those safeties for Philadelphia, they play pretty shallow at times. They're very aggressive. So if Atlanta is to get big chunk plays, and at some point you have to do that, although I don't know if this is the game, Gary, because of the Nick Foles factor, I don't know if this is one where you have to get a bunch of chunk plays, but you still build your offense with the intent of doing that. If they're going to do that, they've got to figure out a way to give Matt Ryan time, probably play action rollout, and then attack those safeties downfield. And we know they can attack the corners with double moves as well. They're going to have to move the pocket for Ryan, I think.
All right. Andy, guess the line.
2.5 on Philadelphia, -2.5.
Atlanta, -2.5. Falcons are a road favorite.
Wow.
I believe, I think I saw on ESPN, it was, according to Elias, this is the first time a number one seed has been an underdog in their opening game.
That's unique. you don't get the backup quarterback factor very often. It's too bad. I know we need to move on from that, and it's Carson Wentz isn't here, but, oh, boy, it's too bad.
Yep. It's all right. Carson Wentz has got 12 years to be doing this kind of stuff. Annie, before we move on to the AFC side of the bill. All right, Annie, before we move on, you know, we all live busy lives. I mean, we, you know, this time of year is insane for us. And unfortunately, as we well know, there's not enough hours in the day to get everything done. So thank goodness for Freshly, the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy no matter what life throws your way. Freshly's team of chefs create all-natural, gluten-free dinners and deliver them fresh to your door. So even if you get stuck late at work, you can still come home to a delicious dinner cooked by a chef. No more worrying about having to figure out what's for dinner, and especially no mess to clean up afterwards. I've been eating them for a couple of weeks, and I gotta say, the buffalo chicken with the loaded cauliflower is pretty much the best thing I have eaten in, like, months. And it took no time to make, no cleanup. Their menu is created by chefs for people who want to eat healthy but are living busy lives and don't always have time to shop, cook, and or clean. The best part about Freshly is the number of comfort meals they currently have that are also super healthy, like the aforementioned buffalo chicken. Customize your weekly meals from their constantly changing rotation of more than 30 chef-crafted options. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Every single meal comes with a detailed and easy-to-read overview of each ingredient featured in the meal. Trust me, there's nothing better than knowing that no matter what happens in my daily life, I have a chef-cooked dinner waiting for me at home. Check out this week's menu created by Freshly's chefs and get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners plus free shipping by going to freshly.com/10things. That's 10things. You'll be so relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal every night with Freshly. That's freshly.com/10things, 10things, for $25 off your first order. Order today to see what life's like when you no longer have to think about dinner.
Number 5.
All right, we're talking AFC football now. Topic number 5. This was the Sunday afternoon tilt, Bills Jaguars. This game was like a caricature. I thought it was fun. I thought it was tense. And I was sitting there just waiting for something to break. Bortles threw 2 near interceptions that would have swung this game, and I was kind of sitting there. I was wondering the whole time, you know, the Jaguars really, I mean, they really, they gave a ton of cushion, considering the talent disparity between the Jaguars' defensive backs and the Bills' receivers. I mean, they were giving an absurd amount of cushion just because they didn't want to give up the 160-yard touchdown and lose the game. And I was kind of wondering, do you even want to give up this much field position when you have Blake Bortles as your quarterback, struggling throwing through the wind? And I was kind of like, you know, if you're the Bills, you're kind of excited about this because now you're put in a position where you are that one bounce, and they've gotten those bounces this year, that one tipped interception, that one big special teams play away from pulling off the upset on the road. But this was... I felt this game was just a complete caricature of itself. It was, it was both defenses dominating, both offenses so hyper conservative in what they were doing, and that's how you get a 10-3 game, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like watching that Bills Colts snow game for earlier in the year, where it's just back and forth, field position, dink and dunk, punt the punt. The 2 big plays, and I guess the first one didn't wind up being big, but the Aaron Colvin interception, which they didn't get points off of it. It still takes away a Buffalo possession. Yeah, it did at the time. It felt like huge, but it all it did was just swing the field position 20 or 30 yards, which relatively maybe was huge this game. Yeah. But that came from Miles Jack and his quickness closing on the ball, the speed factor for Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And then the Jalen Ramsey interception that iced it was just individual talent taking over again. Gary, sometimes it's just as simple as one team's more talented than the other. Although, having said that, and they pointed it out late in the broadcast, and you never know this type of thing for sure until you get the All-22 later, and that usually comes middle of the night tomorrow morning. We'll see it. But Tyrod Taylor leaving throws on the field. And looking underneath when there were downfield throws. And as the game went on, you got the sense he was doing that a little more. And there were examples that were shown late in the game on that last drive of meaningful plays where that happened. That's what's been going on all season long with Buffalo. So both teams stayed, and that's been going on for a number of years in Buffalo. Both teams stayed within their profile. And in that case, that's advantage Jacksonville because their profile, it's as simple as they're significantly more talented than the Bills. Nice season, though, for Buffalo, overachieving the way they did.
Really nice job. And, yeah, Romo was, in his aw shucks Romo type of way, he was kind of,
yeah.
It was almost like as critical as he's been of a quarterback this season when I think he phrased it kind of like, yo, I know you're going to think this sounds crazy, but there was a touchdown available for him on that play. Look at Deontay Thompson in the post
right.
route. Yeah, that was and obviously, you know, it was a shame to see Tyrod go down with what looked like might be a severe concussion to end this game. And by the way, just real quick before we move on to the Bills offseason, my favorite Jalen Ramsey play from this game was not the clinching interception. It was actually that, and this was a big play too, it was that run pass option by the Bills when they had first and goal on the one, and it ended up being the offensive pass interference on Kelvin Benjamin that pushed them basically out of, let's say, out of touchdown range once you're first and goal from the 11 in this game. You know, Ramsey not only got like the full stiff arm in the face, he broke up that play, which was just incredible. I mean, the fact that he still recovered after getting just shoved back by the face, and Benjamin has his hands on the ball, and Ramsey still has the ball skills to get his hand in there and knock it away. It didn't matter, obviously, because it was a penalty no matter what, but it was just kind of like incredible that he still broke up the play. He's really good.
He's so long. Oh, yeah, athleticism and length. We said before the season, I think we said in this podcast a few times, we're going to be talking about him as possibly the best corner in the NFL by the end of the season. And you could see that in his rookie year, he was very raw, but the talent is so off the charts that there's nowhere for him to go but the top of the league. And he got my first team all-pro vote, by the way, and I think A.J. Bouye has been almost just as good on the other side, and that's really where this defense begins, Gary. I know it's Saxonville, and people like that, and Calais Campbell's having a great year. It's the coverage first, the pass rush second for Jacksonville. Both are outstanding, but that's a hard team to throw the ball against. And can we just get to the next item now? Because I want to talk about how they're going to play that. They're the one team in the league that might have the weapons to go after those. Oh, we got to do the Buffalo.
We got to do the Bills. We're going to talk Bills first for the next 90
Gary
minutes.
Grambling. Yeah, Gary Grambling's Buffalo Bills filibuster. It's simple, isn't it? It starts with finding a quarterback this offseason.
Yeah, which I mean, look, they have 2 ones and they have 2 twos in this draft, and it's just a question of are they gonna aggressively make a move to go up and get someone, because the free agent options, I mean, we'll see. You know, people are throwing out Kirk Cousins. We'll see if Kirk Cousins gets away. We'll have a whole offseason to talk about it. You know, Alex Smith is getting thrown out there, but it's kind of like Alex Smith with these weapons. You pretty much just have the same thing you just had with Tyrod Taylor for the most part.
And if you're going to play in Buffalo, you need a guy that throws the ball that cuts through the wind.
Yeah.
Alex Smith doesn't do it. He doesn't have the arm strength. And Kirk Cousins, I don't think, is that either. You need Jim Kelly. You need a guy with a gun. And that's going to be something you find in the draft. There are not going to be any free agents this year with big-time arm strength, because those guys, they really don't get away.
I know a lot of people want Baker Mayfield up there. I think he, and I don't think Baker Mayfield has a weak arm, but I don't think he has the cut through the wind type of power arm that you want up in Buffalo. I think Josh Allen is the guy they should target. And I know everyone hates Josh Allen, and you'll see him this offseason, Andy, and I'd be curious to know what you think about him. I think he's very poor man's Cam Newton-ish with his skill set, but he absolutely has, I mean, his arm is absurd. He has the type of physical profile. He was just really bad at Wyoming last year. And do you want to roll the dice on a guy like that? I wouldn't if my job was on the line, but as someone who has no stake in it, I'd like to see Josh Allen, maybe be the developmental guy up in Buffalo. Other than that, the only thing I'll say about this team is, again, I've said it so many times, I'm stunned. I was thrilled, but I was stunned, and even right up till today, I was stunned they made the playoffs. And I think they could put up a similar performance, similar quality of season next year, And if they have a few bounces go the other way this time, it could be 6-10, 5-11 type of year. So I hope this doesn't. I'm on one hand, I'm glad the whole like playoff drought thing is no longer a point of conversation, because they've had some good teams up there that just didn't quite make it, that didn't quite break through. But this was. I hope this was not a season that throws expectations out of whack for a team that really was looking at a long-term rebuild to try and put itself in championship position, because, you know, the guy in New England is not going to play literally forever, only seemingly forever.
Well, but let's go on to topic. Unless you ask his trainer. Unless you ask his trainer.
I know. Oh, boy. I really enjoyed that story. I enjoyed how humanizing it was for Tom Brady.
Be fun to see. Yeah, you're right. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. And part of me doesn't want to see Brady Belichick break up. The other part of me thinks, what unbelievable theater that would be when they played each other.
Yeah.
But well, another day, right?
We can write our fan fiction and come back with that sometime in May or something.
Number six.
This is the Steelers-Jaguars game that will actually happen next weekend. And yes, this was the five interception game. This was the last game Ben Roethlisberger ever played before he was cut by the Steelers and no one ever heard from him again.
Yeah.
And but that's it. I mean, look, Antonio Brown is going to be a question mark. That will be a storyline all week. Will he go? Will he not go? I can't imagine, and I'm not a doctor, but I can't imagine he would be anywhere near 100% coming off a torn calf. Obviously, he's still, you know, you're not going to, you know, he gives the Jaguars something to think about if he's on the field, but I can't imagine having the type of Antonio Brown impact he would normally have. So what does this do from a matchup standpoint?
Makes it a run game for the Steelers. If Brown is not available fully, it makes it a running game for the Steelers, and it might be that anyway. And they're built to win with the power run game, and that's how you would go after Jacksonville. They're not a great run defense. I think they're a better one than the numbers suggest. But that's if they have an Achilles heel, that would obviously be it. I wouldn't worry about the five interceptions. It wasn't a great game by Roethlisberger last time. It wasn't as bad as five interceptions shown. But it would start with the running game.
All right, Blake Bortles.
And here's the other. Well, yeah. Here's the other part. You know what you're getting from Jacksonville, and this is part of the reason it was bad that Tyrod Taylor was leaving throws on the field in this game. Jacksonville's giving you cover three on first or second down, and then on third down you're getting either cover four or man-free blitz, and it was a lot of man-free blitz against Buffalo. But that's what it is. You're not getting a lot of hybrid stuff. You're not getting a ton of disguise. It might be that some of those blitzes might have some, but you know what you're going to get. So Pittsburgh, it's a matter of executing. And we're gonna learn a lot about how the Steelers view themselves too, because what I love about these defenses that are super talented at all the levels is how you go about playing against them kind of tells you how the team feels about its own offense and where its strengths and weaknesses really lie. I think the Steelers are gonna feel they have to run the ball on this one.
Blake Bortles, that's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, it was reaching a point where you just wonder if they attempt another pass over the course of that second half. If I were them, I'd almost like just install the read option this week. Just break out the old Tim Tebow playbook and go that way.
Tim Tebow
beat the Steelers in the playoffs.
He did. They've done read option with Bortles every week, and they do it just enough. You're going to have to defend it. I guarantee you, Keith Butler, Pittsburgh's defensive coordinator, will spend 20 or 30 minutes going over their read option rules, especially because they've got backup linebackers there.
Yeah.
These guys probably aren't backups in their mind now, but there's no Ryan Shazier, and there was last time they played. He was on the field, so that's a difference. They absolutely will do that, and Bortles survived against Buffalo in the strength of his running ability, and it worked out in that game. That's not going to be your game plan, though. And they're going to run the ball as well. Last time they played Pittsburgh, Bortles had 14 pass attempts. Jacksonville ran the ball in the final 18 plays of the game, and they wore down the Steelers doing that. They're going to have to commit that way again. Now, it was easy last time because they were forcing turnovers and scoring on defense. They had a lead. Can you play that way when you're down by seven? Let's say it's 14-7 and it's 3 minutes left in the third quarter. Can you keep pounding the rock if you're Doug Marrone? Are you willing to do that? I think you're going to have to be. The tricky part is Jacksonville's offensive line is not the line people think it is. I know they was getting called underrated in this game, and anytime there's a run-oriented team that makes the playoffs for the first time in a lot of years, you just assume their offensive line's underrated and a bunch of no-name guys that bring their lunch pails to work. That's not what they are. They're a very average offensive line, and I don't know if they can line up and beat the Steelers' defensive line snap after snap. What you might get, though, it's Pittsburgh so aggressive schematically with their defensive line. They do a lot of defensive line slants, stunts, and twists. They do these on running downs. That's a risky way to play. High risk, high reward. And maybe some of that is the Ryan Shazier factor. And they had such a fast linebacker back there that they could play that way. And if he's not in this game, maybe they're a little more traditional, a little more conservative. But Pittsburgh's D-line is better than Jacksonville's offensive line. And I think if Pittsburgh just lines up and doesn't do all those gap exchanges, doesn't give Jacksonville a chance to crease them for that big 80-yard run, I don't think Jacksonville can run the ball well enough on this team, even with Ryan Shazier out.
Yeah, and look, just to give a quick refresher on what happened at Heinz Field back in October, you know, people look at the box score and say, oh, Fournette went for 180 in this game. And he did. 90 of those had come on, it was a third and short at their own 10. The Steelers sold out and Fournette broke through, and then it was over. At that point, you know, it was a 14-point game on that play with less than 2 minutes to go. So it was not really a... You know, he technically ran 90 yards, but it was not a, you know, it was not a 90 yard run that was created out of anything but desperation on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, other than that, they ran the ball. They ran the ball 36 times that day for 141, which is, you know, when you run 36 times, that's not a huge number. And then obviously Bortles didn't throw it much, and they just got a bunch of turnovers is what won that game.
The one thing, a lot of those runs, and I agree with that. I even wrote that in my film. I was reading my film notes from that game again earlier today, and I wrote very first thing, take out the Fournette run, and you had 36 for 141. A lot of those yards did come in the second half, though, late in the game. They did not run the ball well early on. They got stronger and wore the Steelers down over the course of the game. I don't know if they can – I'm not saying they can't do it twice, but – I like. Let's not forget how good Pittsburgh's defensive line is. Let's just put it that way. They have an all-pro in Cameron Hayward, and they have two tremendous athletes in Javon Hargrave and Stephon Tuitt. And Jacksonville's really not very good, or at least they're certainly not athletic along their front line.
All right. Andy, guess the line.
Steelers by 9.5.
7.
Okay.
Even 7 right now.
I am not great at this guessing the line thing. Yeah,
you're getting worse. No, you got worse.
And then
you got a little bit better.
I haven't looked at a Vegas line all year. I have not seen a scene. This is the first time I didn't even know what you're talking about at first. You said guess the line. I thought, well, okay, the line will be Marquise Pouncey, Marcus Gilbert, David DeCastro, Ramon Foster, and Villanueva.
I was thinking maybe you just thought I was on the phone with someone else and we're just having a different conversation mid-show. Neither of those things were the case.
I'll get the next line. Who we got? Oh, Patriots, Titans. I'll get this one.
I think that one's going to be the toughest one to guess. We'll see, though. We'll find out at the end, though, right?
We're not going to. Yeah, let's not give the best stuff away early here.
and by the way, we're still going to talk. We're going to have the lightning round. We're going to talk a little bit of Gruden Derek Carr marriage and what that means. And we're going to have weekly awards. And once again, I'll say it again before we do them. I'm shocked that Andy Benoit wanted to do them this week. On Andy's,
I just want to stick
plea.
With the format. I'm shocked we're promoting the lightning round. We've still got the Titans, Chiefs, and then the Patriots to go over. Why are we even touching on the? Nobody likes the lightning round.
Everyone loves the lightning round. Everyone loves the lengthiness of the lightning round. That's kind of the draw of our show.
Number 7.
Topic number 7, Andy. We're starting with the Chiefs, Titans. This is the opener this week. Yeah, this was, look, it was a game where the Chiefs were cruising, and we kind of had this conversation all year long, and everyone sort of stopped believing it because Kareem Hunt won their fantasy team a lot of games, and he won the rushing title, and everyone kind of forgot how valuable Travis Kelce is to the team. He was, I can't even believe it was a debate.
Yeah.
That he's the MVP of the Chiefs' offense. He's by far the most valuable guy out there. And you saw what happened to this offense once Kelce was taken off the field for the second half. They didn't do anything.
Well, and it started with their defense. People are criticizing Andy Reid for not giving the ball to Kareem Hunt, and people have criticized Reid over the years for that before with the running back. It used to be years ago in Philadelphia. That was the narrative on him. You can't give the ball to Hunt when Hunt's not on the field and your defense is out there the whole time. They could not stop Tennessee with their defense. And the Titans marched up and down the field and controlled the flow of the game in the second half. All it takes is one or two three and outs, which happen. That's part of football. And if your defense isn't getting stops and your offense isn't running plays, and Kansas City is a rhythmic offense, they need to be out there running plays to beat you. So I think the discussion – some are saying, is Andy Reid the right guy to lead the team? I think the answer to that is yes. I think the discussion is, do they need to make a change with Bob Sutton, the coordinator on defense, and just their whole philosophy? I'm not saying Sutton's a bad defensive play caller, but just their defensive philosophy as a whole, and is it working for them still? Because what's been true year after year, and I still don't know why, and it was true in this game against the Titans offense that has not run the ball very well this season, is they don't stop the run. They have a lot of talent on their defensive line. They don't stop the run.
Yeah, that was kind of the crazy part about the comeback. It was a lot of sustained drives. I mean, this was a game the Chiefs were leading 21-3 at halftime, and that three came courtesy of a parting gift from Jeff Triplett, who is retiring, the longtime referee who managed to botch that call. But yeah, this was a 15-play drive to open the second half. They had an 11-play drive for another touchdown. The Chiefs ran like, what do they have, 12 plays that they ran with the lead in the second half, and a handful of those are Kareem Hunt runs. He got stuffed on a first down for a loss of a yard. They had a series where he ran it on the first two downs and set up a third and two, and then they didn't convert, so... Yeah, they weren't on the field. I guess it would have been nice if they handed it to Kareem Hunt seven straight times. He went for 5 yards each time, but that was not happening.
Didn't
so I'm
go
not
that
sure
way.
Why.
This game's really microcosm of Kansas City's season, isn't it? And remember, they lost a playoff game in similar fashion. It is more electrifying than this, but to Andrew Luck and the Colts back in, I think it was 2013. And Andy Reid told me after the season, he said that game was a microcosm of our season. They started hot and they blew it in the end. It happens twice. It's happened twice now with Kansas City and Kareem Hunt kind of as well, because he went quiet. When they struggled middle of the season, their running game was a big part of that, the struggles of the running game. And they weren't able to turn it around in this one. Disappointing for them. But I felt Tennessee won the game just as much as Kansas City lost the game.
Yeah, and Mariota was good in the second half. It was kind of what we've seen from him when they have to sort of spread it out and go. He's been a little more effective than when they've sort of been operating their game plan, I guess. Just real quick on the Chiefs before we move on to the preview of Titans Patriots here. They lost their best defensive player in the opener. And you know, they lost Travis Kelce at halftime of this game, and then the lead got away from them. And this was supposed to be a transition year. They traded up in the first round and spent that pick on Patrick Mahomes, who obviously didn't play in a meaningful game this year. They got rid of their GM. They got rid of Jeremy Maclin. I mean, this was supposed to be something of a transition for the Chiefs. So where they kind of ended up is where maybe they were kind of expected to end up when it was all said and done. Everyone just sort of got carried away after that opening night performance in Foxborough and the 5-0 start. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think this was a team that was equipped to beat Pittsburgh or Foxborough or New England on the road in the postseason anyway. So, you know, they're trying to break through.
And they
have Mahomes next year, presumably. And we'll see if he's the guy who sort of pushes them over the top with what they have now on offense.
Number 8.
Let's go on to topic number 8, and that is the Patriots and Titans. This is obviously, I mean, this looks like it's going to be an extremely lopsided game. Is there any reason to think differently?
Yeah, I think there is. I think New England wins the game, and they're the best team going in. Certainly, the formula for beating them, and this has kind of been more the case over the recent years when they were this Julian Edelman quick strike underneath passing offense, and they're not that at all anymore. They're a vertical offense. It's Brandon Cooks. It's Chris Hogan. It's Philip Dorsett, kind of, but he's still running those routes. They go downfield now, and Brady works late into the down. It's a whole different offense. But let's just keep it simple to start. The formula for beating New England has always been press man coverage to disrupt the timing of the wide receivers, and then interior pressure, bodies and defenders in the face of Tom Brady. That's what Tennessee's built to do. That's what they've been doing all season. That's how they try to beat you. They're not an edge blitzing team so much. They're an interior pressure team. They do stunts and twists right up inside. You see Brian Arakpo, Eric Walden, Derek Morgan, these guys, these linebackers, outside linebackers, walking around behind the nose tackle, behind Jarrell Casey, giving you those amoeba fronts. That's how they play. And they've got three corners now who are playing well in man coverage. Logan Ryan's a stopper in the slot. I had him first team all pros, my slot guy. Adoree Jackson can travel with quick guys. I think he gets the Brandon Cooks matchup. He needs to play better than he did in the first half against Tyreek Hill last week. But that's who's going to travel. And then Ty Smith has played pretty well outside since he's moved into the essentially the starting nickel lineup. They've got safeties and linebackers who are decently athletic there. This team has the type of defense that can make the game hard for New England, especially when you consider, and Kansas City found this out, that it's a very good run defense as well. New England is built on run-pass balance this year.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see.
Just dismiss all of that, huh? That was a big wad of nothing I just gave you right there. You think New England's going to win this 40-7?
Not 40-7, maybe 30-8.
Okay.
How's that?
Yeah, well, that's bold of you to predict a two-point conversion like that.
Yeah, no, I'm saying four safeties. I think the amoeba defense forces four safeties, and then the Patriots get 30 points otherwise. I mean, what do you make of Mariota at this point? What do you – and I guess, you know, I mean, look, the Patriots defense has been a problem at times this year. I should say a problem for the Patriots, not for their opponents.
Yeah.
I mean
– it's a bend but don't break defense. You know, since week 5, New England's defense, it's given up a lot of yards, but they've given up the fewest points in the NFL since week 5. And they're going to make Mariota beat them many times. They're not going to give up the gash plays, and Tennessee's really not built to get those as long as you can contain Derrick Henry. So I think Mariota's a guy that, even though I think he played very well in the second, tremendous in the second half at times even against Kansas City, he's someone I'd want to play against.
And we will talk about Mike Mularkey at some point when the Titans season ends. But just real quick, it was a wild wild Q&A he had after that win, where he was kind of like, yeah, no one's told me whether I'm going to work here, and my family is all stressed out about this, and I have no idea what's going on, because all those reports started leaking. You know, first it was, oh, if they miss the playoffs, he's out, and then they made the playoffs, and then it became, well, if you lose in the first round, he's out. And I think it's pretty clear that John Robinson, he has the Patriots ties. Does he want to bring in Josh McDaniels to sort of be his partner with Marcus Mariota and do it that way, which is, you know, logical and reasonable and all that. But Mike Mularkey's just in such a weird spot right now.
I'd keep him. A couple of winning seasons in a row. They have an identity, a clear identity. I would absolutely keep Mike Mularkey.
Well, I want to talk Mularkey and Mariota a little bit more. We might have a chance next week. Maybe we'll have a chance. Won't have a chance for another couple weeks, but we will talk about that during our playoff series here. Andy, it's that time to guess the line.
Oh, Patriots 12.
Oh, pretty good. Let's see, 13.5, 13th. So yeah, 13.5 most places. 13 or 13.5 most places. I really thought the Patriots were going to be. I thought this would be more than two possessions. I thought you'd be looking at 16 or 17. But I guess I was wrong. People not getting carried away. Maybe they think the Patriots are just not going to deal well with distractions. That was that ESPN story.
Yeah, well, we'll see. The Patriots were in this position last year, an AFC South team. They were expected to blow them out,
yeah.
And they ultimately did. They actually did cover against the Texans, but it was a game that the Texans outplayed them in, on at least Houston's defense versus New England's offense. One of the weirder games I think you'll ever see, in fact. I've never seen a team win by 18 or whatever it was in the playoffs, and the feeling coming away, and I think they'll tell you this in an honest moment. I know the Texans, they said this for our preview story on the record. The feeling was the team that won by 18 got outplayed on offense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a
different
the
defense
Brock
here.
Osweiler factor.
Titans defense is playing really well right now, and that should not be overlooked as they head into Foxborough.
All right. Andy, before we move on, you know, no matter what you're doing with your life, at some point you're going to need a suit, whether it's that big job interview, maybe a work event, wedding perhaps, whatever it may be. Now, some of us are lucky enough to be able to go out and buy off the rack and look good, but for most of us, buying off the rack means you're going to look like Ben McAdoo at his opening press conference, and that's no good. You might have always thought you don't have time or the money to get a well-fitting, tailored suit. Well, I have good news for you. Indochino, they're the largest custom apparel company out there, and they make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for a great fit. Here's how it works. Just go to Indochino.com. That's Indochino, just like it sounds. Pick your fabric, choose your customizations, and then go through their step-by-step video tutorial to get and submit all your measurements. I did it, and I promise you, it is so easy, absolutely idiot-proof if I can do it. Place your order and wait for it to arrive in less than 3 weeks. Along with Indochino.com, they also have showrooms across North America if you want to get your suit that way. And this week, our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering 10 things, 10THINGS at checkout. That's over 50% off the regular price for a premium made-to-measure suit, plus the shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code 10THINGS, 10THINGS, for any premium suit, just $359, plus free shipping, an incredible deal for a perfectly tailored suit.
Number 9.
All right, it's that time that everybody loves. Topping number 9, the lightning-ish round, and it actually will be fairly quick because we only have two topics this week. We're starting with John Gruden is officially going to be the Raiders guy. Derek Carr. What do you do with Derek Carr at this point? He's a young quarterback in crisis at this point. They signed him to the contract. They're married to him. We talked about this offense is sort of a disjointed. They have two identities. They have the power run game, then they had the spread it out, which it seemed kind of stale, and those designer deep shots didn't show up this year. Do you rip up what they've been doing with Carr and try and reinvent the offense at this point?
Yeah, that's why you just paid $100 million in over 10 years to John Gruden. That's exactly what the deal is. And I don't know why is Carr a QB in crisis?
Because he was really bad this year after being promising, especially the second half of 2016.
Sure, I guess. I mean, here's what we know, though. Carr's got a great release. He's athletic. He's mobile. He's smart. He's run an expansive offense for much of his career. Wasn't the best designed one this year, but for dating back to his rookie season, we've seen him do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I think the question is, does his personality work with Gruden? There's been some wondering aloud of maybe that's going to be an issue or not. Winning will usually solve all of that anyway at some point, if you can win, of course. And then the other thing is, how much does he play in the shotgun, and how much does he play under center? It's a shotgun league now, and my guess is John mm-hmm. Gruden understands that. But John Gruden never liked the shotgun. I mean, he hated it for years. And Derek Carr spent his whole career in the shotgun for the most part, even dating back at Fresno State, and my guess is probably when he was in high school. So that there's going to be some growing pains inherently, and there's a lot of verbiage in Gruden's system as well, and he's hard on players, and they probably do need to figure out what they're doing at wide receiver and who's going to be the running back. Is it Marshawn Lynch? Is he the guy one more year? What's that about? I get that, but you know, let's not call it a crisis, Gary. I mean, we're still talking about a talented young quarterback, and a lot of teams would take that kind of crisis.
Yeah, but it's a guy who just slid back significantly in what was in what I expected to be his breakout year. I thought he was going to be like an MVP candidate this year. He was not that. So
no,
I'm
right.
Sticking
he
with
wasn't.
Crisis.
All right. Well, that's fair. We've got all offseason to go for it. But Raider fans, by the way, notice who's the one taking the pro Derek Carr side. I would expect some. What's the opposite of a hate tweet? A love tweet? Somebody send me some love tweets this week.
I just swing back and forth wildly. I thought he was MVP, and now I think he's, I don't know.
Yeah, actually,
Poor man's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I don't even want the love tweet. I just want send Gary Grambling the hate tweets. I'd rather it be that way.
That's all right. I'm never on Twitter. I'm on Twitter sometimes. My feelings would be hurt. Not really though. Marvin Lewis, he's staying. The Bengals are not ripping up anything. Marvin Lewis is staying, which we taped the show last week and we were just like, oh, it's not official,
we
but
assume,
Marvin Lewis
yeah.
is out.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were, and that's shocking in this lightning round to have Marvin Lewis back. They're redoing a lot of the coaching staff around him, though. I know Bill Lazor's back at offensive coordinator, but Paul Gunther's going with Gruden to Oakland, and they've lost James Urban, a wide receiver coach who's been a fixture there for a long time, and a guy that some people thought should have been the offensive coordinator. And Paul Alexander, the O-line coach who's been there 23 years, he's gone. There's a lot of change around Marvin Lewis, but Lewis is still the guy at the top. That really surprised me, to be honest. Lewis has had a nice career. It just felt like now was the time to make the change. All things come to an end at some point. I guess they felt this wasn't that point. You got to like the coaches who are out there, too, though. You have to love the candidates. And Mike Brown, maybe he didn't for whatever reason. Although I don't know how closely he's looked at them. They didn't interview anybody from what I know.
Yeah.
But maybe he didn't love the candidates. I don't know what's behind this. I was blown away that Marvin Lewis is coming back.
Yeah, no, that was definitely something of a buzz that the candidates just weren't very good this year. That were kind of burning through coaches at such a rapid pace that everyone's kind of damaged goods at this point. But Marvin Lewis coming back, that was a big one. I just really like the idea of his Bengals career ending with just ruining the Ravens season. In a game they had nothing to play for. I thought that was kind of a sweet, fitting ending.
Well, fitting ending would probably be a wild card loss, wouldn't it?
With a complete meltdown at the end.
I just cost myself any chance with the Bengals in any project now. I'm glad he's back because Marvin Lewis is very media friendly. We did that Vontaze Burfict piece. You know, we had all access during the season.
Yep.
You don't get that from a lot of coaches. Marvin Lewis is and guys like him. Look, it's we don't want to make him out to be anything less than a good coach. I think he is a good coach. I was just 15 years. I was just surprised that they didn't step aside on this one. Everyone, you know, kids got to move out of the basement at some point.
That's a good metaphor right there. I think that's a good metaphor to end the lightning-ish round on everyone's favorite part of the show. We will go on to topic number 10.
Number 10.
And again, Andy asked for this, the weekly awards.
And then I'm supposed to have some really good ones teed up.
Because
I
didn't think we were
going to
do
I
it.
For it.
This
well,
was, this
I,
was the conversation.
We've done it all season.
The conversation right before the show, we were saying, okay, what are going to be the last two topics? We'll do coaches. And I said, I had put maybe regular season awards when I emailed him. And Andy
That's too
said,
long. Too much talking for that.
Weekly awards.
Yeah. And I'm going Drew Brees on offense.
All right. I'll go Cam Newton on offense. I thought he was sharp in this game. I thought if Kalen Clay holds on to and let me say he was relatively sharp. I wasn't, you know, I didn't think I was looking at Tom Brady out there, but if Kalen Clay holds on to that touchdown in the first half, we might be talking about a different game at this point. And if, you know, maybe if Mike Adams bats down that ball at the end, they have enough to punch it in.
Well, how about going with players, the guys that did hold on to the touchdowns in? What about like Michael Thomas or Ted Ginn?
Michael Thomas didn't catch a touchdown.
Well, but I'm saying theoretically. You know what I'm talking about.
The guys Ted that Ginn did ran make fast. Tough that catches. Was good. No, I'm giving it.
Defensive
I'm giving it to
player.
Cam.
All right. Well, go.
Especially coming off the Falcons' loss in Week 17, you wondered if it was kind of going to be a meltdown. And like we said, the weapons are not very good. He doesn't have a huge margin for error. I thought he made a couple of nice throws.
He did have a nice game, maybe
swung this game. But yeah, defensive player of the week. Who you got, Andy?
I'll go Calais. Well, I'm gonna split it and then see if you can come up with someone. I'm taking Calais Campbell and I'm taking Cam Jordan off the board. Dominating defensive hybrid, movable defensive lineman. Jordan plays both edges. Campbell plays all across the front. They both penetrated inside and outside all game long. And you could argue, certainly on Jordan's side, I think you could argue that their teams don't win without the plays they made. Cam Jordan was a huge difference maker. He's the reason your boy Cam Newton didn't put the Panthers over the top in this one. And that's not a shot at Newton at all. This is Cam Jordan had a great game.
No, Cam Jordan steamrolling Christian McCaffrey in the backfield there on the double team, and that was the closer moment. That was Cam Jordan as Kira Sedgwick as the closer to finish that game, drawing the intentional grounding, which doesn't show up in the box score, but is impressive nonetheless.
Gary, by the way, they need to remove the word intentional from that penalty. That just confuses everything. Just call it grounding, and there's a lot less controversy and debate about the intentional grounding call. Would you ever call it intentional pass interference, intentional holding, intentional false start? Just say grounding, because 90% of penalties in the NFL anyway are forced by the defense. But good defense makes a reactionary move go badly for the offense. You get a penalty. Holding, a grounding in this case, get rid of the intentional part.
That's a good point. That is redundant to call it intentional grounding. It's only a penalty because it was deemed intentional.
Well, it shouldn't be. I mean, thank you. Yeah, and most of them, they're not always intentional, but you throw it away because you're under duress and you go, I had a receiver in the area, made such a bad throw you couldn't tell. That's still the penalty. That's good defense. The defense should get rewarded for that. That's the whole point of the penalty being there.
There you go. I'll give it to, I had actually jotted down for this one two names, and then since you took Cam Jordan, I'll just give it to Jalen Ramsey. Again, the clinching interception, I just love that. I love the fact that he broke up the pass on that Kelvin Benjamin offensive pass interference. That's just what he does. He breaks up everything. He ruins everything for an offense. Special teams player of the week, Andy.
Who kicks for the Rams now that Greg Zuerlein was out? Who is that guy?
Oh, the Greenwich financial guy.
That's
Ficken,
who I got.
Sam Ficken, I believe, is the name, and I didn't just look that up, and I will as you explain in depth why he is your special teams player of the week.
Because he's the first kicker all season long that I've Googled, and the reason I Googled him was because I was watching the Rams film against Tennessee, and I saw some of McVay's play call, and I thought, my gosh, he must think that his O-line coach Aaron Cromer is the one out there kicking the ball. Like, who is the kicker that McVay clearly doesn't seem to trust right now? And I found out it's Sam Ficken. And then Ficken gets in these playoff games, and I don't think he missed any, did he? He did okay, right?
He didn't miss any.
So there you go. Special teams player of the week.
There you go. Just like me picking Cam Newton. You picked the kicker on the team that lost by 13. I'll go with Matt Bryant on the road, the two 50-plus yarders, the 51 and the 54. I think that's legit. He was the best kicker in that game by far and deserves this award. Coach of the week, Andy. Who do you have?
Coach of the week. I'm going through the winning coaches. You know, Atlanta's offense didn't look great. How about Marquand Manuel? defensive coordinator. I'm going to go
with
that. And then you're going to have nowhere to go with this because I don't think you can give it to Sean Payton with the weird fourth down call. Dennis Allen's defense gave up some points. You know, Tennessee, maybe Mularkey. I mean, I'll let you do it. You can go ahead and make your own coach of the week, but I don't think you have anywhere to go with this.
I was just getting into Mularkey for winning while everyone was just – no one could wait to fire him. They could. Almost did it at halftime. And, yeah, okay. He stuck around. It's like the old Wayne Fonts thing back in the 90s with the Lions.
Yeah.
He's just sticking around. Can't kill him. Andy, that's a wrap. We're going to have similar shows going forward in the postseason here. We'll preview the upcoming games as we recap the seasons and the previous games. We'll do that again next week. It'll be fun. That's going to be it for now.
I love divisional round week. And usually you get Martin Luther King Day, and I don't know when that falls this year, but it's usually a 3-day weekend too.
So it is Saturday, a 3-day weekend. Yep.
And that doesn't really apply to us because we do the same work no matter what. But I remember as a kid growing up, and those Sunday games felt like double Saturday games because you didn't have anything going on the next day.
There you go. It's going to be a good weekend then. For me, the kids are off of school, so I'm stuck here with a bunch of kids screaming at me all day on Monday. That's what we do in this house. All right. Thanks, as always, to producers Shelby Royston and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil, making it sound good. All those guys at Cadence 13, the best at what they do. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You really are the best. We appreciate it so much that you choose to spend your Mondays or Tuesday or whenever you listen to this with us to sort of get your football news and analysis. Andy and I want to hear from you. If you're an angry Raiders fan or if you're a happy Raiders fan, you can tweet either of us, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI. We're also on Facebook. You can also write into talkback@themmqb.com. Let us know what you love about the show, what you hate about the show, or just say hi, I guess. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast Without Rear, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and this show, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including themmqb.com, si.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.